All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Michael Brock, a retired educator from Milwaukee Public Schools. Now let's delve a little deeper.
Oh my goodness.
you know, there are people who say the problem in the district is the MTEA, the teachers union, and that the teachers union runs Milwaukee Public Schools. And I got to tell you, man, I didn't just start being involved in what happens in Milwaukee Public Schools. Mm-hmm. I have been, and never once did I not, or was I not involved in it. And I'm a union guy. Let's say that first and foremost. I've always been a supporter of unions. I don't care where it is, except for maybe the police. No, I'm only joking. I shouldn't say that.
That's another story, I think, in another show.
But I'm a supporter of unions. I think mm-hmm. unions serve a purpose in a society that, if it wasn't for unions, people would not make a fair wage. We live in a society, unfortunately, that is not benevolent when it comes to paying people. So unions are necessary.
Well, you know, unions going back, you know, before the day, a lot of African Americans migrated to the North for support, and they couldn't get in jobs, and they wouldn't have gotten those jobs had not it been for unions. I myself worked in a factory for years when I was high school and coming out of high school before, you know, I went to college.
Right.
So, you know, definitely. And my father, you know, union man, you know, he's been all over the place. He later went into administration, you know, in the factories,
right,
but as a supervisor, but he still worked with union employees quite a bit.
So unions have their place.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
If it was a fair society, and businesses were fair, and heads of businesses and others were fair, we would not need that. But having said that,
but one question, if I
go
may.
Ahead.
And maybe I'm getting ahead of myself right now, but unions post Act 10, where are we at?
Well, so here's what happened with unions and people who were hypocritical, who said they don't like unions and who try to destroy unions. Many people on the right, conservatives, try to destroy unions. But the hypocrisy in that is not all unions. They believe and support police and fire unions. They support them. But a teachers union, oh, no, we don't. You know, those people are from a different planet. Those people are weak. Anybody who's in a union can't control things that happen in their lives, and so unions are for weak people.
If I may interject, speaking of that and going back to MTEA, as a teacher myself, in coming in the first day of school post Act 10, when the unions were basically non-effective at that time, we didn't have to pay dues. They couldn't collect dues and all these other things.
That was post Act 10.
Post Act 10. I show up at the steps of the school, and I would be handed a book which showed me what my rights were. It didn't have anything to do with teachers union or anything else. This is what the rules are in this school. So it basically was school to school in terms of how they wanted to treat the teachers.
So the destruction of unions.
Right. Right.
And even back when I spent 34 years in a union.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. I always told the union leadership at the company that I work for that what the unions needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
Was educate their members
mm-hmm.
on what unions are about.
Mm-hmm.
Because over the years, people wound up in unions who badmouthed the unions and would say that unions are only for weak people. Yet they got the benefits from them.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And didn't have to do anything other than get their time in. But when people don't understand, but when people don't understand the history of unionism, then they're quick to point the finger and say, I don't want to be in a union. So,
well, nobody, it's just like the police. Nobody wants a union until you need one.
So let me say this about what took place with Act 10. And so many of the MTEA members going back, this is what, 10 years ago?
No, at least, yeah.
Okay. I said, because I had done my research.
Mm-hmm, 10 years, right.
And I said, Scott Walker would have never been elected governor of the state of Wisconsin had it not been for the educators. They voted overwhelmingly for Scott Walker.
Right.
But they never expected that he was going to turn around
and
do to them what he did.
Right,
but
exactly.
They voted for him overwhelmingly.
Yes, they did.
Same thing with tradespeople who have been union people for a long time voted overwhelmingly for Donald Trump.
Well,
so
yes.
There's something at the root of people who that old axiom, cut off their nose to spite their faces. But when those teachers found out what Scott Walker had done to them, they were incensed, and that's why they spent all that time out in Madison.
Well, another reason that our now Governor Tony Evers ran for office because of the split, and he felt that Scott Walker had blindsided him and wasn't meeting with him. So there was some animosity there. And again, the teachers, he had the support of the state and local, you know, teachers.
Yeah, but I don't want to get bogged down in Act 10 and what happened with Act 10,
right,
because I want to get to the point where educators are saying we're underpaid. And everybody can say we're underpaid.
Right.
And so my thing is, people make decisions. They go into the career paths that they choose. Nobody puts a gun to their head and says, you go into this career path. That's just like police saying, well, we don't want to live in Milwaukee, okay? And even though the city had this already in place, the people who work for the city, i.e. teachers, police, fire, for 100 years, that was the case. And people accepted that. You know that going in. But then to turn around and say, it's not fair to us. You know, we don't want to live in Milwaukee. You want the job. The job belongs to the taxpayers. I'm saying this to educators now.
Oh, you know.
That's my point. You chose to be an educator. You came to Milwaukee and Milwaukee Public Schools. You knew the lay of the land, which said you have to live inside of the city. And then you raised enough hell to conservative lawmakers to say, they're making me live where I don't want to live. Well, my response was this. Nobody ever said you can't live where you want to live. What we were saying is, as taxpayers in the city, don't take our job with you. Because the jobs don't belong to individuals, they belong to the taxpayers.
Right.
And so educators come and go. When you left, Mike, that job went to somebody else, because those jobs don't belong to individuals. They belong to the taxpayers. And so when people were allowed to leave this city, it impacted those of us who are still here paying taxes. So educators were able to get that done. And then to turn around and say, well, we aren't getting enough money. Well, you know, how many other people have the power to say we aren't getting enough money and then are able to get it?
And what's enough money? And also, this residency requirement that you speak of, which was a dog whistle. Okay, that's why they went crying. People want, one thing that I learned, you know, out here and whatever, on the trail, is that people want what they want. And I didn't really understand what that meant at first. And that's what I was told. We want what we want. And they didn't want the crime. They didn't want to have to deal with that. All these other dynamics that come with urban setting, they didn't want that. So we want to be able to go home, the police, the teachers, and everybody. We want to be able to go home and be around a comfortable environment where, we don't have to deal with all the crime and all this other stuff that we have to deal with. I'm dealing with it in the classroom every day, and I don't want to have to come home to it. We want what they want. So that was
that was the dog whistle up there.
So, I mean, let's be clear on that.
But they got what they wanted. They got what they asked for.
This is the whole purpose of the union representation, political representation, everything else. As long as people can get what they want. And at any cost. Now, that may be the cost of education. That may be the cost of a tax base. It may be the cost of everything. But people want what they want.
Well, but to say we're teachers, we're special, and so you must accommodate us. And I say this because I know this is not a popular discussion.
It's okay.
But facts are facts. Mm-hmm. And truth is truth. Mm-hmm. And I'm never going to compromise the truth for anybody.
Okay.
So we do understand the aspects of it and why that happened. And so there are people who now to this day, we got to go to break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. You going to be all right?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show, 844-967-2789. Don't worry about it. I'm the one doing the talking. We'll be right back. All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My good friend Michael Brock, retired educator, is still here. So listen, I'm right where I wanted to be. Timing is perfect and right. So here's what I want to say. You know, there are folk running for governor on the Republican side of things. And they are saying, we want more voucher schools. We want more private schools. If you elect me, that's what we're going to do. We're going to dismantle the public schools and we're going to have more private schools and choice schools. Well, let me tell you why you need to, if you're on the other side of this, you need to think long and hard. Because, again, early on in this process, when Polly Williams and Larry Harwell created that, it was supposedly created to help poor black kids get a chance at private education. You don't have to take my word for it. Look it up. And if anything that I'm saying is not accurate and you disagree with it, 844-967-2789 is the number. Now, they've expanded that. How many of you are aware that now they want vouchers all over the entire state?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Definitely. That means in Rhinelander.
Brown County.
In Fitchburg.
Brown County.
And, yeah, and all over.
Green
over,
Bay. Come
yeah,
on.
All over the state of Wisconsin.
Sure.
And even for people who are paying, who can afford to pay for their kids to go to private schools, how many of you are aware of the fact that they want vouchers for those people? People who are already paying for their children to go to private schools, they want them included in vouchers. So this scam that has been set up, and for those of you who think and that, you know, these people are really out for you, and for those of you who have your children in those schools here in Milwaukee, and that they are doing this, you know, because they really care about your child, it's bigger than that, okay? It is to open up business opportunities for for many. If you look around all the new schools that are being built in our city, I used to do a show called Educators Amplified, or I was a part of a show called Educators Amplified, where we would do on Saturdays, we'd have educators from different parts of the state, and we would have a live radio show for 3 hours. We go to different venues and have discussions from people who don't look like you and me, Mike, mm-hmm. from different parts of the state, who know that their public school systems are being dismantled too, under the guise of vouchers and choice schools. And so they were frustrated and angered by the fact that they didn't ask for vouchers and choice, but yet they had come into their neighborhoods and into their communities. So all of this, again,
absolutely,
at the root of it, mm-hmm. is a sinister plot of people who are looking to make money at the expense of many and you, the taxpayers. Because part of what's going to happen if they get their way is they're going to have to raise the property taxes to accommodate more of these voucher and charter schools. And if I'm incorrect, correct me. 844-967-2789. But I know you can't do that. Go ahead.
Well, you know, it's a couple things. We're talking about a cap, too, and what can the, based on the individual monies that the students get when they come in for the count, will be based on the tax base and how much the constituents or the parents or the tax base can handle. That's the cap. Now, but also on the other side of that is the separation of church and state.
What is that? They removed that.
Right, yeah. Well, you know, it's,
I know.
They want,
I know,
what they want.
Yeah.
So anyway, the whole thing is, so we have, that was always been a contentious conversation between Democrats, Republicans, pro-choice and charter and versus privatization and public schools. But having said that, there's also very little. There is some accountability for private schools. Some, but it's pretty much up to the discretion of the Department of Public Instruction. And there is a conservative agenda being broached in private schools. You have your religious choice schools, which have predominantly, for the most part, a religious base where they pray in school, and that's allowed. It's not allowed in public schools, though, but there's not that much accountability. But so what they're teaching in terms of their curriculum in these conservative private schools is pretty much up to the district and ultimately to the schools.
So here's
conservative areas.
So where I have a problem with most of that,
mm-hmm.
is we don't have a universal religion in this country. This is the one nation that is supposed to be and give access to all religions.
Mm-hmm.
So when our government gets involved, mm-hmm. and allows,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A Christian theology.
Mm-hmm.
to be taught, and those resources that the government is paying for children to go to these schools,
mm-hmm.
the contradiction is all over that.
And it doesn't even have to necessarily be a Christian theology. They could be worshiping whatever they worship. Could be whatever.
Yeah, but so we know the majority of those schools are Christian.
And also, and conservative.
Yeah.
And conservative.
Yeah. Well, those things go hand in hand.
Well, you have to look at also what they're doing in public schools, the transgender bathrooms and things like that. I mean, all of this kind of stuff. I guarantee you right now those won't be allowed in the other
Now, listen, schools. Man. I just, when people go to talk about Milwaukee public schools failing.
Okay.
And which is what all this is about. I wanted to try, through my good friend Michael Brock's, to try to point out some roadblocks that are there. And I believe if you lift the impediments and the roadblocks, you know, people can educate. People have been trained to educate, and that's what they do. And if we can get the impediments mm-hmm. out of the way, mm-hmm. Milwaukee Public Schools would not that it's faced with, the numbers of people who would be successful would be much higher. You know how I know?
How do you know?
Because when those impediments weren't there, Milwaukee Public Schools educated
through the roof
a whole lot of people
through the roof.
And even to this day, there are children graduating from Milwaukee Public Schools who are going to Penn University, Brown mm-hmm. University, mm-hmm. Harvard,
yeah.
Yale.
Right.
Okay, but you don't hear that.
Right.
Right? Why? Why don't you hear that?
Because it doesn't make news. We hear right. about students driving on the grass and all this other kind of stuff, but we have, like you said, we have to get rid of the impediments, and that means support your teachers. Listen to those teachers. They know what they're talking about.
Hey, we
got
to do this.
I got to
go to break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. The Earl Ingram Show, as always. You can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at the same number in the studio. My good friend Michael Brox, a retired educator. So, Mark, yes. Michael, what do yes, you sir. Want to say to the listening audience as a person who was in education for all those years? When you hear people pointing the finger and saying, you know, you guys are all failures.
Well, you know, we don't see the fruits of our labor until well after that seed has been sown.
Right.
I wouldn't, definitely not a failure. I see some of my students now, they're grown, they have their own families, and it's still Mr. Brox. It's not OG, it's not dog, it's not bro.
Right.
It's still that element, that respect, and I respect them, and I'm glad to see that. So it all depends how you judge it. If you want to, let's take a look at, you know, let's look at resources and what teachers are working with, and let's get in, let's support them, do that. But remember, teaching is not a job. It's not even a career. It's a calling. Everybody can't do it. People look at me, how could you do that for 30 years? So you get into that zone. And, you know, it's like watching a soap opera. I mean, you can't miss a day. You miss a day, you're going to be out the loop. You know, we're there every day supporting not only our students, but the families and each other. And, you know, it's not just the teachers. It's the maintenance workers. It's the cooks. It's the principal. It's the APs. It's everybody in that building, including the students and the student activities and the student.
Is it safe to say it's an extended family?
Yes. But see, that family can be toxic, or it can be, it all depends.
Like in your own family.
Exactly. But, I mean, it's like, it's what we build as a school culture. It's what, when you hit that door, students and parents want to know it too. Students going to know, is this a school that's going to tolerate my nonsense or not? And students want to come into a safe haven where they can be educated. So it's really up to develop a school culture that is no nonsense. We love our kids. We support our kids. We'll go to the wall for our kids, and the kids know it. But the kids are not running this school.
So what's your take on curriculum? Because because you hear people now talking about CRT, and we don't want that taught in the schools. What's your thought on whether or not parents should be able to dictate what's being taught in school?
Well, yeah, they're paying the taxes. Ultimately, the parent is the boss. That's what I tell my principal or the school, MPS, whatever, where the school I'm working for, they're paying my salary. But I work for my parents. And I keep in close contact with the parents. And I pretty much, you know, I haven't had a problem, you know, with that. You're talking simply about CRT, the race curriculum with the schools.
So parents should be able to determine what books are taught in the school? You think that's a good deal?
Well, I mean, at some point, DPI, Department of Public Instruction, is going to have to take ownership and stop passing the buck. I mean, are we going to teach it or aren't we going to teach it? We are going to teach it. Why?
Right.
And it's not just that. It's also, we talked about financial literacy. People think that it's a big, long, boring thing. But financial literacy is something. We're in a capitalist system. People need to know how to talk money to understand assets and liabilities. And who in their life is an asset and who in their life is a liability. We want to start teaching this at K-4, K-5 so they can take this information home and start being a part of their dialogue. It's a whole different mindset. So, you know, curriculum. And I've been on curriculum boards and writing curriculum and things like that. And I'm working on a curriculum now that I would like to see in the schools, not public, private, in all the schools.
So my mom never once came up to the school and dictated to the district what books should be read. I it's a different world now.
It is a different
world. It's a different time.
It is a different world.
And so they somehow believe that the educational system knew best what education is about, and for decades, centuries, educated people knew what was important to teach. But now we have people who can come in and say, no. They don't know anything about education. They're not educators. But they can come in and dictate what books should be. I don't think that's
burning books is nothing new in the education system. And teachers understand what is the function of an educational system is to perpetuate that system. It's not to change that system. You know, we've had riots on college campuses and everything else so that they can incorporate political science classes and things like that in the curriculum. So, you know, to understand that the purpose of education system is to perpetuate and keep that system going.
So what is the purpose of an education?
Twofold. I mean, first of all, the purpose of an education is to, when it first came in, like I said, we're a agrarian society where everybody was mostly on farms and things like that. So when that started going down, they had to find somewhere for kids to be. So that was in school to keep them or in the military. So to keep them out of the streets keep them occupied. So the purpose of an education, the actual origination of the education was to house all this population that was coming off the farms now and coming into the city. Keep them off the job market as long as possible.
So some will say the purpose of an education has always been to prepare people to get a job.
Okay. And also to hold them out of the job market, because remember during the time where you had the child labor laws, kids were working at 8-9 years old full time, you know, 14-15 hours.
So I would say the purpose of an education is to there are many different reasons and rationales, but I think one of the most important roles that education can play is to protect people from being cheated by a society that will cheat them at every turn.
Well, my purpose as an educator.
I'm saying that society will absolutely cheat you at every turn.
Every chance you get.
Yeah, that society. And it's unfortunate.
Right, exactly. But my whole purpose. And educators have different reasons for going into it. Ultimately, it's to educate the kids. But is to make them productive, open-minded, free-thinking, contributing citizens, you know, where they'll want to give something back.
You know,
they want to give something back.
You know, that's a great, that is a great thought. And if we could make that a reality, you know, we wouldn't be in a condition we're in now in the society.
I agree.
You know,
I agree.
I mean, if everybody was able to take what you just said and make that a reality, it would be a much better place. But again, we live in a society that is going to take advantage of you at every turn. If you don't know, you talked about financial literacy.
Literacy, right.
People don't know. We live in a society that will take every dime you have because you don't know.
And also, you know, friends and associates. You have to be able to decipher who is a asset and who is your liability, and start having those conversations. Because once you have the right literacy and understanding of what financial literacy and what it is all about, you'll understand how to make better decisions, I would think.
To understand financial literacy, you have to first understand finance. You have to first understand math.
That's true, Earl. And also, you have to understand the basics of financial literacy is assets and liabilities. If you understand the social aspect, not just financial in a financial sense, but also what is a waste of your time and what's not. What are you bringing into this household? Because we want young kids to go back and have these conversations with their parents and older brothers and sisters.
Do you think that it was a mistake to take cursive writing out of the school system?
Yeah, I don't understand what it did. I mean, because it was easier on the teachers in terms of classroom, because I mean, it's not just cursive writing, but it's also understanding how to read a clock with the numbers on it. A lot of my seniors couldn't even do that.
No, because it's digital.
When I see
seniors, and some, I wonder if in universities, Sam, in universities, you guys didn't use cursive because you were on the computers.
Right. No, I haven't used cursive ever. I learned it in grade school, and they told me I needed it in high school, and I genuinely never used it.
What about to sign a contract?
I do sign my signature, but my boyfriend never learned cursive, so he kind of signs a little funky.
Mm. So that is... Mm-hmm. And I can tell you why they said they did that, because we're never going back to cursive. Cursive is gone. We were talking earlier about technology, and there was a decision made that we're never going to use cursive again. I think it's a mistake. You know,
I do too.
Kids should have learned it, but. But, you know, they're not going to be penalized because they don't know cursive. Because what they do know is how to navigate these things right here.
But if they don't know how to spell in the first place, I mean, spell check's not going to help you. You know, if you don't know how to grammatically put together a sentence or a paragraph, let alone an essay or a short story. I mean, all of these things.
Well, so you don't need those things in your life. You know, I mean, to be quite frank, 50% of the American people don't use any of what you just said in their lives.
In terms of writing skills.
Yeah, because of what they do for a living.
It all depends what you do.
I know, I'm saying, but 50% of the people aren't doing that type of job.
Are you going to put a resume together? Are you going to put a cover letter together? I mean, you're going to need writing skills. And if you're just relegating yourself just to block.
If I needed a resume, I know where to find it on this computer. They show me how to do it. So what I'm saying is technology has really come so far, man, that it's eliminated a lot of things that I think children missed out on. You know, in the long run, is going to have an impact on them. Got to go to break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
You're right.
Back to the last few minutes of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789 Texas. That's the same number. My guest is Michael Brox, retired, educated from Milwaukee Public Schools. Let me ask you, man, as we get ready to wrap this up. When the tragedy in education, the real tragedy in it, is that you only get, for the most part, this one shot early on in education. And what happens is, if that one shot early on to get kids acclimated to it early, the earlier they learn to read, the longer they'll become readers.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
Once they learn that discipline, they'll fall in love with it. They'll continue to grow, and nobody can take advantage of them. But let's say kids who don't learn to read. You know, there's statistics that say, you know, 80% of the students in Milwaukee Public Schools are behind in reading and math. You know, 80%.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Right.
It's hard to catch up.
Well,
because once you go to the next level, nobody's going to wait for you.
Well, that's why many of our scholars, our students, are deficit. They're not on grade level. You can blame it on a lot of different things. You know, to play the blame game. But you know, you give them the orientation when they come in. There's a certain curriculum that it's called pacing guidelines, and there's certain things that students are supposed to learn during the course of their academic life. And it starts at K-4 and it goes all the way through to 12th grade. And all teachers are supposed to be on the same page with that. Unfortunately, we're not. And some of the students get left behind because of behavioral problems, absenteeism, not showing up.
Which is a big part of it.
It's huge. But, I mean, and so we get them when they come in the classroom and we, you know, make, you know, contact with the parents and everything like that. But we want them in the classroom so that they can learn. And some teachers are just, frankly, overwhelmed in the K-4, K-5 grades. You got, you know, 30, 40 or more, you know, students in there. And then that goes through to, because I have taught from second grade up through 12th grade. So that's when they're learning. Their cognitive skills change. They're more adaptive and alert and able to comprehend more types of things in more different types of ways.
So I've noticed sometimes that teachers need to be clear about the children that they're educating. For instance, Johnny has problems reading. And I've suggested this to some teachers. You know, you need to, as quick as you can, find out who the Hellraiser is when you get in, start a new semester.
Find out
who that person is. And instead of trying to embarrass that person, create a relationship. With that person. Now, I'm not an educator, but it seems like it makes sense to me.
And for the most part, that's what they do, because you don't have to find them. They'll find you.
Right.
And you keep them busy. You give them a job. You give them a classroom job, responsibilities. Because they, for the most part, they want to, you know, they want, especially at the younger and even at the older age. Because I have had situations like that, and I'm sure other teachers out there who are listening have also, you know, that's your guy or your gal who you know, give responsibilities around the classroom.
Let's do this. Let's go to the phone lines. Who do we have on the line, sir?
Susan's calling from her car.
Hey, Susan, how you doing?
Hi,
thank
Susan.
You very much for the call.
I'm good. I really am enjoying this conversation this morning. And I have a question regarding curriculum. Oftentimes, most of the curriculum is taught, from my experience with my children, for the kids in the middle of the bell-shaped curve that are able to mostly do the work, and there are kids on either end of that spectrum who really need to have more of a activity-generated curriculum so that they don't have to be seated to learn. Some children learn better if they're moving. And I didn't know, you know, I know the public school system and most systems just don't tolerate that, those differences, and so it's harder to learn if you're not engaged. I know you know, so I guess I'm asking the question is there a way to do a blended curriculum where you're actually doing multiple things like math, English, social studies in the same class so that you don't have to have these specific classes?
Thank you very much for the call, Susan. I appreciate it.
Differentiation. Differentiate your students in the classroom in terms on what their learning capabilities and how they learn and what level they're actually learning on. So, you know, we had our MAP testing and our forward testing and whatnot. So use that data to differentiate in your classroom.
You know, man.
Good questions.
You just get to a point where that kid who's going to be disruptive. I've seen teachers make the wrong mistake and point that child out and try to get them to read something. Child knows he can't read, and he acts a fool.
And it's his turn to come up to read. I mean, especially if you're going down the road.
Right.
It's his turn. So you notice you get closer to him, now all of a sudden he's fidgeting,
but she. But teachers have to have that sixth sense, right?
Well,
I mean, the good teachers.
Yeah, well, you got to know your students.
Yeah,
and the students got to know you, and they got to feel safe in that classroom to know that you're not going to
expose them. They don't want to be exposed.
Well, we're going to all help you get through this.
Yeah.
I've had students and they were in sixth grade couldn't read a lick. By the time they get to eighth grade, they were the best readers. Right now, they're killing it. They're killing it. I'm not because I'm a great teacher, because everybody in the classroom all bought into it, and they would help him through the words, and there was no teasing and stuff like that. It doesn't cost any money for that. That doesn't cost any extra money, but it's developing a rapport. And also, you know, you have to have a command for the material, too. So, but it comes to having a rapport with those students trust you, and you hold them to a higher standard.
So what is it then, Mike, in the end? Your vocation was and is education. Did you make a mistake?
Where?
In going into education.
It called me. I was at home. I was in 12th grade, 11th grade myself, and I was going through my periods.
Wilding out periods.
Yes, and rebellious and all this kind of stuff. And my father asked me, what do you want to do with your life? I said, I want to be a history teacher. I was acting up. I know he was surprised. I had a pack of Bel Airs rolled up in my sleeve, vacuuming the front room or something like that, and just being testing him, which it wasn't a good thing to do. I don't know why I did it,
right?
But I just told him, I want to be a history teacher, and it found me.
You know, people have the worst part about all of this as we get ready to wrap this up is people are born with abilities and skills. And everybody has some ability and some skill and some gift. And the worst thing in the world is that they leave this planet without ever knowing they had skills and gifts. Mm-hmm. And that to me
is
where education has to play that major role. All right, man.
Okay.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Very much.
Let's do it again.
We will. Mr. Michael Brox, and thank everybody who made the show go. We made it. Thank you, Sam.
It was a pleasure.
I'll be back on tomorrow. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. See you guys later.
Mm-hmm.